Today's Shir, the Daf Yomi, is the Gemara in Ksubos Daf Samaches. We begin 15 lines from the top of Samaches Amud Aleph with the words Tanan Hasam. We learned in the following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah that's found in Peah, which teaches us, Rashi gives us the first part of the Mishnah, which we don't list over here, which is very important. And Rashi teaches us in Dibra Maschel, Kan Kodim Shiyavo Lidei Givui. So it says, Hodit Nan, it says in the beginning of the Mishnah in Peah, Ein Mechayvim Meikara, that which it says that you're not obligated over here in our Mishnah, that you're not obligated to go and sell certain things, is talking about what? It starts off in the middle of nowhere, as we'll see. So it's kishabalito leket. If a person wants to go collect leket, only poor people can collect leket. So how poor do you have to be able to collect leket, shichra peya, other matnos aniyim? V'lo yu lo masayim zuz. If the guy doesn't have 200 zuz in his bank account, so then that person is entitled to go collect the matnos aniyim, the presents that are given to the poor people. But what happens if he doesn't have cash, but he has properties, he has certain other valuables that would add up to more than 200? Does he have to sell them? And then if he doesn't sell them for a total of 200, then he's allowed to collect. But if he could sell them for more than 200, he's not considered an ani. So that's what the Mishnah there in Peah says. Vim hoya mocher klei tashmisho. If he would sell all of his utensils, all of his various tools that he has, hoya masig l'masayim zuz, then he would have more than 200 zuz, and therefore one might have thought that he's not enabled to go and collect the matnos anim in that situation. So our Mishnah tells us, ein mechayvim osalimkor, we don't have to go and sell the properties to make him be, quote, rich enough that he doesn't have to collect the, not allowed to collect the matnos aniyim. So it says over here in our Mishnah now, now we can start today's Shia. Tanan Hasam, we learned in Mishnah and Peah, Ein Mechayvin Oso Limkor Es Beso V'Es Kli Tashmisho. In order to reach this threshold of being an ani, we don't say you have to dispose of all your properties, all of your utensils, anything that you possibly have. And if that doesn't add up when you dispose of all those properties to 200 zuz, then you can take the matnos aniyim, you can collect the leket shichran peah. But if you sell all your stuff, then you'd be a wealthy, quote, person. More than 200 is considered wealthy. That you don't take the matnas aniyim. No, we don't do that. We don't force the person to go and sell their properties or their tools to make that 200 threshold. So that's what the Mishnah in Peah said. But the Gemara now questions. It says elsewhere below, are you telling me that that Mishnah is true? But it says, Vatanya, it says in the following brisa, Hayu mishtamesh b'chlei zahav. We do make a person sell. For example, if he has no assets, so he doesn't have $200 in the bank, but he has clay zav, he has golden utensils, so we make him sell the golden utensils, and instead, yishtameis b'chlei kesef, let him use silver utensils. So he has, for argument's sake, a golden fork, so sell the golden fork, and buy with it a silver fork. And this way, with the money, the difference between the gold and the silver, see if you reach that 200 zuz threshold. If you're now above it, then you're not entitled to collect the matnos aniyim. B'chlei kesef, if a person already only has silver utensils, so you have to sell them. Yishtamish b'chlei nechoshes, and go buy bronze or copper type of utensils. And if you now reach the 200 threshold because of that exchange, then tough luck, then you can't collect matnos aniyim. So how can you tell the Mishnah in Peah says that you don't have to go sell your clay tashmisho? This brisa certainly seems to suggest that you do. So Omer is vidra. Rav said, no, it's not a stira. Lo kasha. The two brisa and the Mishnah don't contradict each other. The brisa is talking about ha b'mita v'shulchan. We're talking about a bed and a table, which is not something that a person, the Gemara is going to say in a moment, really cares about. Does he have this utensil or that utensil? So therefore, we make him sell the gold one for the silver one. We make him sell the silver one for the copper one. As opposed to habakosos ukaaros, with cups and with plates, which are much more of a personal usage, and a person doesn't want to use something different than that, so that's considered like an essential need. So we don't make him sell his gold cup or his gold plate to use a silver cup or plate, as opposed to a gold bed or a silver bed. We do make him exchange it for the lower value type of utensil. Gemara's questions is, this way, why should there be a distinction between kosos and karos and a meat and a shulchan? What's the rationale? I just told you what the rationale is. This is where I got it from. Maishon, you're going to tell me that kosos and karos, we don't force a person to go sell his gold and exchange it with silver, or his silver and exchange it with copper. If it's kosos and karos, why not? Because the Omar, he's going to say, listen, it's disgusting for me. I'm used to using these utensils, and to use something else is disgusting to me. And therefore, we don't force him to go sell such a personal item like a plate or a cup. So the person could say as well, mita v'shulchan nami. What are you talking about? His bed or his table, it's also a personal item, which he says, potentially, Omar, lo mikabali lavoy. It's not appropriate for me to use a different bed and a different table. So therefore, the rationale should be the same, and therefore that can't be the explanation to explain why the Mishnah says we don't make him sell stuff, and the Braita says we do make him sell stuff. So we have a different suggestion how to reconcile the two. Amar Rava Bre de Rabba. Rava, who was the son of Rabba, said, B'machareisho de Kaspa. The way we understand it here is we're dealing over here with a plow that is made out of silver. Now, a silver plow is not a personal item. The person says, well, I love my silver plow and I can't use a copper plow. No, that's something that makes no difference whatsoever. It's not a personal item. And therefore, if you're claiming that you're a poor person, well, then go sell your silver plow and instead use a copper plow. And then if you don't have 200 zuz, you have to make that sale. Okay, guy needs a plow to do his work, so you can't make him say, have no plow. But in that situation, yeah, exchange your silver plow for a copper plow. And in that situation, if you still don't have the 200 zuz after that exchange, so then you are entitled to go collect the lekka shulcha and peya. As opposed to the cups and the plates or the bed or the shulchan, that we don't make you exchange. That's a personal item and don't make you exchange it. That's a simple understanding of Maharesha de Kaspa. The Shita Gubetzis, however, brings down another explanation, and that is that it means a certain type of a comb, a silver comb. Now, that makes a lot more sense than to say it's a silver plow, because really nobody has a silver plow. So a silver comb would make a lot more sense. Now, a silver comb would sound like it's a personal item. However, the Shita Gubetzis says, no, it's still not such a personal item that a person wouldn't be forced to go and exchange a silver comb for a copper comb. And therefore, after you make that exchange, if you don't have 200 zuz, then you'd be entitled to collect the matnos aniyim. But here you are forced, the braisa would force you to go exchange your silver comb for a copper comb. Okay, so that's how we reconcile the Mishnah and the braisa. Rapapa Mar Lokashi, he gives a different terrace. He says there's no steer over here between the Mishnah and the braisa. So the Mishnah is talking about that you don't have to go and sell. Kan kodem shiavo l'dei giboy. That's before the person is forced by the Beis Din to go make a reconciliation. As Rashi tells us that we're dealing over here with the person who inappropriately took leket shichon peya. He claimed to have less than mosayim zuz. V'nota leket shichon peya. And then it turns out, v'noda she'asher haya. And it turns out he's a faker. He really was a rich guy. So what does Beis Din do in that situation? Beis Din comes, boyin v'govin heimenu mashnoto. They go take from him what he took. Now, let's say he doesn't have assets. He doesn't have cash. So v'nein lo kidei l'shalem, he actually doesn't have assets. He's a rich guy. But he has all of his stuff is in movable property. So in that situation, they force him to go and sell mocher kli tashmisho hayikarim. They make him sell all of his gold and silver utensils u'mishtamesh b'chusim. And in that situation, they make him go and use lesser value utensils. So the reconciliation between the Mishnah says that we don't force it to sell, and the Braisa says we do force it to sell. Rapapa says it depends what you're talking about. The Mishnah says we don't force him to sell is that's when the guy hasn't yet taken inappropriately. He comes to base and he says, listen, I'm a poor guy. This is the assets that I have. I have these gold and silver utensils, but I have no cash. So Basin will say in that situation, if you don't have 200 zuz, you're allowed to go and collect the leket shichon peya. Whereas in the Braisa, where it says that we force him to go sell his gold for silver or his silver for copper utensils, it's all about what the guy inappropriately took. Ah, he doesn't have cash right now, but in that situation, we do force him to sell his gold and exchange it for silver, or his silver in exchange it for copper, in order to pay back what he inappropriately took from the leket shichon and peya, the matnas ani. Next Mishnah. Yisoma, if you have Nebuch, orphan, shesiato ima oachel midaito, you have this girl, Nebuch, she lost her father, so her mother or older brothers are allowed to go and marry off. Again, it's a marriage through abundance, we've discussed many, many times, but in order to make sure that she doesn't go unfed, that she doesn't go and unfortunately not get taken care of, so they can marry her off. And then, in that situation, of course, there's Mian if she doesn't want to stay in that marriage, but the expectation is that they would still give her some sort of a nedunya. In any event, they marry her off, the kosvula, and they give her as the nedunya, b'meya o b'chamishim zuz. They only give her, this is a relatively small amount, we learned in the previous Mishnah, that the poorest girls in Eretz Yisrael, the poorest Jewish girls, they get chamishim zuz. The Beis Din, the Gizbat Stalker that goes and marries off the Yisoma, has to provide her with at least chamishim zuz. Or here, the mother or the older brother gave 100 or 50 zuz. Again, not a very big nedunya. Now, she was actually entitled to more because it was more in the estate that Nebuch, her dead father, had left to the older brother. So in this situation, the kosvul of the meyo b'chamishim zuz, they only gave her a nedunya of 100 or 50 zuz when she was really entitled to much, much more. So yecholahim yishitagdil, when this Yisoma grows grows up and becomes a gedola. Right now, she's a katana. That's why they're allowed to marry her off. She can't marry herself off. So the mother or the older brother can marry her off. So when she becomes a gedola, she's allowed to go. She can go and take their older brother or the mother to Beis Din and say, I was roy, I was supposed to get such and such a nedunya, and you gave me much less. You only gave me 150. I was really entitled to 500. Masha roy, lina asilah. She can go and take them to court that they didn't give her the proper nedunya she was entitled to, which Gemara will explain exactly what that proper amount is. We discussed this previously as well. A tenth of the estate is supposed to go for the nedunya of each daughter. Okay. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, how do we calculate what's an appropriate amount to give to the daughter? So Rabbi Yehuda goes and says, you base it upon an estimation of how generous the person is. So, for example, Im Heisi Esabas Rishona, this wasn't the first daughter to get married. While the father was alive, he married off the first daughter and he gave her a certain amount of his estate as her nedunya. So Im Heisi Esabas Rishona, so then the second daughter, who Nebuch is now getting married only after the father passes away, Inasin Lishniya, Kidero Shinasin Rishona. Rabbi Yehuda says, you see, well, the father gave the first daughter X percent of his estate, so we give the second daughter X percent of the estate as well. Because Mistama, that's what the father would have wanted. Rabbi Yehuda says, you do an umdina, you do an estimation. Here you have a real way to estimate it. Look what the father did to the first daughter, Mistama. That's what he wants to the second daughter. He loves all of his children the same. If he was generous or a certain level of generosity with the first daughter, so then we assume the same thing with the second daughter. Chacham disagree with Yehuda. Chachamim pa'amim sh'adam ani v'hesher. Sometimes a person is originally poor, and then he became rich. So maybe what he would give to the first daughter isn't what he would give to the second daughter, or vice versa. First daughter, he was rich, a washer, and then they're ani, and then he became poor. So therefore, we can't go and start estimating what do we think he would have given. Ella, what do we do? Shomim es hanachosin v'nosin law. It's always 10%. That's what it means. You take the evaluation of the estate, and you always give 10% to the daughter as her nedunya. Okay. That's what the Mishnah tells us. Now we're going to discuss this further. Amar Shmuel, the Gemara starts and tells us what Shmuel's opinion is. Le Parnasa, in regards to Parnasa, that's Nedunya. Parnasa is the word that we use for Nedunya. As Rashi says, Habas Yisoma Shabasali Nase, when the girl who's Nebuch an orphan, she goes to get married. So Nosin Lo Nedunya, she's entitled to Nedunya. Kifi Omed Sha'anu Bikiyim Be'aviyah. So Shmuel seems to be saying, like Rabbi Yehuda, Le Parnasa Shamin Ba'av. We go and evaluate how much the father would have given, and you do this estimation based upon whether the father is, Rashi says, Vitron, he's a generous person, or Kamsun, he's a stingy person. That's what Shmuel says. Exactly like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara questions this, however, by bringing the following brisa that seems to disagree with Shmuel. Now, Shmuel's an Amori, can't disagree with the brisa. Meisve, the brisa says, Habanos nizonos umisfarnisos. The daughters of the Nebuch dead person are entitled to get mizonos and are entitled to get a nedunya, minichsi avin, from the estate of their dead father. How? Ketzat. Ein omrim, we do not say, Ilu aviyokayam kach v'kach hayinosila. We don't say, like Rabbi Yehuda said, and like Shmuel said, that we go and figure out in Umdina how much the father, if he'd been alive, would have given as an adunya to his daughter. We don't do that. The Brisa says beferish. Ela what? Shomin es hanichosin v'nostla. You calculate how much the estate is worth, and you give her 1/10. You give her a amount that is prorated, so to say, for the estate. Now, let's finalize the question. My love, Parnassas Abal, are we talking about the nedunya that the dead father is giving to his daughter as nedunya to the husband? So Gemara says, no, lav dafka. It's not a kasha on Shmuel because this brisa doesn't necessarily go against Shmuel. Amar of Nachmar Yitzhak, lo. It's talking about the Parnassas Atzma. This is talking about mizonos. It's not talking about nedunya. Gemara says, listen what the brisa said. The brisa said honey zonos, which is mizonos, but it also said umis parnasos ktani. That implies both mizonos and, in fact, the nedunya. So my love, achas parnasas abal, one is referring to the nedunya, the parnasa, the achas parnasas asma, and one is referring to the mizonos that she's entitled to. So it is a kasha and Shmuel. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, no, it's not. Lo. Both of them are talking about mizonos. They're not talking about nedunya. The lokasha, why does it say nizonos or mifarnisos? So that's not a kasha, because ha bachilu v'shasiya, one of them is referring to the entitlement that she has to food and drink, and the other one is ha bilavusha v'chisuya. The other one is the mizonos is referring to not food, but it's referring to clothing and to other types of covering. What does it mean, other types of covering? This would mean like the bedding that she's entitled to, like other requirements of clothing her. So therefore, it's both talking about mezonos, and neither one is talking about nedunya. But, like Shmuel would say, nedunya, you estimate how much the father would give her. More questions, Shmuel again. Tanan, our Mishnah, we learned, and therefore we don't say that just like he gave the first daughter, he gives the second daughter, because maybe things change. His financial circumstances may have improved or worsened. Maybe originally he was a very poor person, and that's why he only gave his daughter $5,000. And then, now he's much richer, he would give the daughter $50,000. Or vice versa. He originally gave her $10,000 because he was rich, but then now he's poor, he can only give her $100. So what do we do? We take total estate value, the notice of the law, and we give her 10%. Now, my ani umayosher. What does it mean that he was poor and became rich, or he was rich and he became poor? So doesn't it mean what I just said? If you're going to tell me inema ani b'nechasim, if you're telling me that it means that he was a poor person in terms of his nechasim, or asher v'asher b'nechasim, like I just said, that it meant that he was rich or he was poor, and then it became the opposite. So that would imply that that's only the opinion of the chachamim, but the Tanakhama of Yehuda would disagree with that. Mechlal, the Tanakhama sabar, even if he was rich originally and now he's poor, he still has to give the rich persons in the dunya. But how could that possibly be? He doesn't have the money, as we'll see in a second in the Gemara. Afilu Ashiv Ani Kidmeyakara Yahidin law. So he gave the first girl $50,000. He has to give the second girl $50,000, but he's impoverished now. How could he possibly do it? Halesle. So that can't be what it's talking about. Nobody would say that he must give her $50,000 if he originally gave the first one $50,000, but he doesn't have the $50,000. Of course he can't give it to her. Elulav, aren't we talking about Ani Bidas? Ashiv Bidas? Aren't we talking about that? The Chachamim's opinion is you don't evaluate whether he's a Vatron or a Kamtson, like Rav Yehuda says, whether he was a generous person, a Vatron, or a Kamtson, a stingy person. No, it means that you just give 10%. Because Uktani, Shomim, Esa Nechasiv, and Osilo, we don't start guesstimating what the father's personal choice would be in terms of giving to his daughter. We say, no, it's 10%, 10%, 10% across the board. And therefore, we don't follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and therefore, Shmuel wouldn't go like the opinion of Yehuda, Shmuel should go like the opinion of the Chachamim. Shmuel says, no, he holds like the opinion of Yehuda. And I'll show you that that's true, because we learned in the Mishnah that Tanan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imhisi Basa Rishona, he says, Beferish in our Mishnah, that if the father married off the first girl, then you give the same amount to the second girl. Now, obviously, it can't mean that you give the same amount because he may not have it. So therefore, it means you judge him just like he was generous to the first girl, assume he'd be generous to the second girl. Just like he was stingy to the first girl, you assume he'd be stingy to the second girl. So therefore, that is what Shmuel is saying. He passes like a Yehuda. No, why didn't he say so? Instead of saying, Shmuel holds that the din is Liparnasa Shomim Biav, why didn't he say Liparnasa, we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda? The name Halachic Rabbi Yehuda. Why did he say it the way that he did? So the Gemara says, because if he had said, "Yeah, my halachic Rabbi Yehuda," you know what I might have thought? Hava Amina, I would have said, "Dafko hisia the galidaite." It's only a case where he married off one daughter previously while he was still alive, and he's demonstrated exactly whether he's stingy or whether he's generous. So only in that situation would we say, then you go that estimation for the second daughter. But Avaloisia, if he had never married off a daughter in his life, never, he died before he married off any daughters. Now the first daughter is to be married off. So what are we going to do? We're going to try to guesstimate what his natural tendencies, proclivities are. Is he generous or is he stingy? No, maybe not. We have no paradigm to follow. He never married off a daughter. So maybe in that situation, Rabbi Yehuda would actually hold low that we go and give 10%. And we don't start guesstimating, well, he's generous or he's stingy. So the chiddush is by saying that the halacha is that we follow the umdina leparnasa shomim ba'av. Shmuel says that it's more than just saying like Rabbi Yehuda. It's saying that even in a case where we don't have beferish, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you follow the first child. So even there, we follow the estimation, the umdina. Kamash v'lan, time of the Rabbi Yehuda, the azlinim, the reason that we follow Rabbi Yehuda, the azlinim basa umdina, because he holds that we follow the umdina. In other words, we calculate, we guesstimate what we think the father would have done. And this is true. Lo shna hisia, velo shna lo hisia. Whether we married off a child or not married off a child, we do our best to estimate what the din would be because we guesstimate the father's estimation. So why did he give us the case of hisia? It shouldn't have told us that case, and then we'd know the default is that you always follow the umdina. So the Gemara says, that's lahodiecha, to teach us kochan de rabbanon, to teach us the strength of the rabbanon shita, that even though here, where we clearly see what his intentions were based upon what he did to the first daughter, the Afagad the Hisia, even though he married her off, the Gali Daita, and he demonstrated what his intentions are, Lav Dafkud, that's going to be for the second daughter, Lozlina Basa Umdina, and we give 10% to the second daughter, regardless of whether the first daughter was more generous with or the second daughter was less generous with. So that's the din according to the Chachamim. Amalei Rav Lachis, the Rav said the Rav Lachis, the Darshinan Mishmo Halachi Rabbi Yehuda. Do we say in your name that the Halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda? Do you also agree that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? So Amalei, so Rav Lachis told Rava, yes, hey Rava, it should be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. Call Kihani Milim Ayasa. All these good things that are said over Tidrashu Mishmo should be said over in my name. Yeah, you're always welcome to say a good vart over in my name. I would love the good varts to be said over in my name. Did, however, Rava really say this? But Tanya, we learned in a Braisa that Rava passed it like someone else. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi said, Bas hanizonis min ha'achim, if the daughter is getting mizonos from her brothers, Nebuch, the father died and should be supported by the estate, no telus isur nechosim. She collects 1/10 of the estate for her nedunya. V'yama Rava, hilchos like a Rabbi. Do we pass him over here like Rabbi? Now, if you're telling me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, then you should do an umdina. So why did he say that we follow the halacha is like Rabbi, that he gets 10% across the board? So there's no steer in Rava. Rava could say that the halacha is like Rav Chista, meaning like Rabbi Yehuda, that we estimate what the father would do. And he could also say the halacha is like Rabbi, that we just give 10%, because the two are talking about different circumstances. Lo kasha. The first case is talking about Hod the Amidne, Rabbi Yehuda is talking about, well, we know, or can we estimate what the father would have wanted done? However, when Rabbi said that the halach is 10%, Hod the Lo Amidne, that we have no idea what the father would be. As Rashi tells us, Hod the Amar Rabbi, Isu Nechasin, when Rabbi said that we take 10% and we don't make an umdana below Amidne, that's only La'av Shalor Gorbinenu. That's because the father didn't live amongst us. We never saw him give it appeals. We never saw the way he gave presents out to his children on their birthdays. We never saw the way he treated the neighbors. The law of Madnu also of Daito, and we have no way of coming to a conclusion to estimate what he would have done. In Vatron Im Kamsam, was he a generous person or was he a stingy person? In that situation, we take the default of 10%. But if you can estimate, then you do estimate. So it's not a steer to say that we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda, and yet we also pass him like Rabbi. And I'll show you that this is correct. Gemara says, Hochanami Mistavri, it makes good sense because the Omer Ravad Barava, Maisa, Ravad Barava said about the following Maisa, the Nosa in law, Rabbi Echod Mishneva Sorbin Chosim. The once as a Maisa girl came to Rabbi to be asking for a Nedunya from the estate of her father, and Rabbi didn't give her 10%, he gave her 1/12, which is less than 10%, 8%. But Kashin Adodi, Rabbi said you give 10%, and here Rabbi gave 8%. So Gemara says, Elalav Shemami No. We see over here that when Rabbi could estimate that the father was a stingy guy, as he did for this girl, Hod Amidnei, that he follows the estimation. And 10% is Hod Lo Amidnei. That's when he's not able to make an estimation. Oh, Shema Mina. You clearly see that there's no steer over here that Rabbi could say both of these. One is when he does an estimation, and one is when he's impossible to do an estimation because we just don't know. Then you take the default 10%, which is exactly what we just said, how Rabbi could pass him like Rabbi Yehuda and could also pass him like Rabbi. Because Rabbi himself passed him like Rabbi Yehuda, except when there was no way to make an estimation. Then he said you take the default 10%. Now let's go back and discuss this again. Gufa. Amar Rabbi. Rabbi just said, Basin, he's always with an Achim, Nutellus, Isin, Chosim, that we take 10% off if we're not able to make an umdin on the father. So then the default position is that the daughters get 10% of the estate. Now, Amar Lulu Rabbi, so that they said to Rabbi, Libvarecha, according to you, Mishiesh Lassabana, so the guy has 10 daughters. And he also has Ubain, and he has one son. So then the son, Min Hadin, collects 100% of the estate. The daughters get nothing. But Midin the Rabbah, none. The rabbi said that each daughter gets 10%. So according to what you're saying, Rabbi, and Lulabain, the Malkum Banu's club. So the first daughter gets 10% of the estate, second daughter gets 10% of the estate, third daughter gets 10% of the estate. After all the 10 daughters take 10% of the estate, there's 0% of the estate left for the son. Is that really true? So Rabbi says, no. This is what we call Asiraisa de Rabbi, which we use in a number of different places in Shas. So what Rabbi is saying is, this is what I'm saying. Rishona notelas isun chosim. The first daughter, she goes and takes 10% of the estate. The second daughter takes 10% of what's left in the estate. Shnia b'nash shi'ayra. So let's say there was $1,000. So the first daughter takes 10%, she takes $100. That is $900 left in the estate. The second daughter takes 10% of 900, not 10% of 1,000. And therefore, the second daughter only gets $90. And the third daughter, Ushlisha, is Bamesha Shaira. So now there's $810 left in the state. So the third daughter will only get $81, etc., etc., etc. The chozros v'cholkus b'shava. But not fair to the last daughter that she should get much less than the first daughter. So what you do is then you pool all the money. So you take the $100 the first daughter got, the $90 the second daughter got, the $81 the third daughter got, etc., etc., and you add them all up, and then you divide them by the number of daughters. So everybody gets an equal share. In other words, it's all even, Stephen. And we turn to Samaches Amid Beis, where we ask the obvious question. The first girl's been married for 10 years. What's she supposed to do now? Give back from her $100 and start apportioning some of it to the other daughters? That doesn't make any sense. The daughters got married over a different period of time. So what says Yitaka right? This is what Rebbe's saying. If they all happen to get married at the same time, it doesn't have to be 10 daughters 10 years apart. There's two daughters. They both get married at the same time. Daughter number one and daughter number two. In Bo Kulam Linosa Kiachas, Chokos Bishava. So then they are each entitled. So we don't give the older daughter or the first one to get married 10%, the second one to get 10% the remainder. No, they're getting married roughly at the same time. So each of them gets the 10% and then the 10% of the remaining, and then they add them together and divide them equally by two. That's what Rebbe's telling us. Messiah Lila Rav Masna. And this is in accord with what Rav Masna said. What did Rav Masna say? Dama Rav Masna in Baal Inase Kulum Kiachas. He said, Beferish, if they all come to get married at the same time, not los iser echad, then each of them gets one tenth. Shmuel says, what do you mean they get one tenth? So there's 10 of them getting married at the same time. They only get 10% and they have to split it between all of them. Each of them gets 1%. Iser echad salkudaita. Could you possibly mean that they only get a total of one tenth? Shmuel says, no. Elanot los iser kiachad. They all get their one tenth together. In other words, they do what we just said, the iser ice. So the Rebbe, we do this, the 10%, and then 10% of the remainder, and 10% of the remainder, and then you add them all together, and you divide it by the number of children, the number of daughters, and that's how each of them gets an equal share. Tanu Rabbanan, we learn the following braisa, Habanos, Bein Bagru, Ad Shelo Nisu. The daughters, that the Nebuch, the father died, and they now want to get their Nedunya. So whether they are Bogros, or they haven't gotten married yet, or they got married before they reached the status of being a Bogeres, so Ibdu Mizonoseim, when they hit Bogeres, or if they get married, so then they lose the right to be sustained by the estate. They lose the Mizonos because their husband is now supposed to sustain them, or if they're a Bogeres, though the Ksub only said, until they become a Bogeres. Once they become a Bogeres, they're on their own. However, even though she's a Bogeris, or even though she got married, below Ibdu Parnasasim, but they're still entitled to their dowry, that they get the Nedunya, that they still are entitled to get. So, in this situation, if they got married without taking the Nedunya, they're still entitled to go and collect it. This is Rebbe's opinion. So, Mizonos, they no longer get when they're either a Bogeris or when they get married. However, the Parnasa, the Nedunya, that they're entitled to get, even if they didn't take it when they got married, at any point afterwards. That they never lose, Divrei Rebbe. That's Rebbe's opinion. Rav Shimon Elazar disagrees. Rav Shimon Elazar says, no, Omer, af ibdu parnasasin. If they didn't collect the Nedunya at the time they got married, they lost that as well. And when they hit the age of Bogeris, or they got married and they didn't collect the Nedunya, they lost the Nedunya. So what should they do? The girl's going to hit Bogeris stage. She's 12 years old and 5 months. And she doesn't have a shidduch in sight, so she doesn't want to lose the Nedunya. So what should she do? Ketzed in Osos. How should they go protect the Nedunya? Sochos len balam. They should, so to say, hire themselves out for a husband. In other words, they should go and tell the people, listen, if you want to marry me, I got this Nedunya coming. So if you marry me now, you'll get a huge Nedunya. You get a very nice Nedunya. And in this way, the husband will marry them right now, and they'll get the Nedunya, and everybody will be happy. The girls will get the Nedunya, the husband will be happy he gets the Nedunya, and the girls will be happy that they're getting married. Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Lihuna, Hilchasuk Rebbe. Rav Nachman said that he heard from Rav Huna that the halacha is like Rebbe. We, in fact, paskin the way Rebbe just said over here, that the girls only lose the mizonos, but they don't lose their dowry. They don't lose the parnos, or the Nedunya they're still entitled to, even if they're the Bogeris, or even if they got married and they didn't collect it, they're still allowed to go and collect it. More questions. This Esa Rola Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, you said this in the name of Rav Huna that the loch is like Rebbe. Rav says Rav Nachman, that's not true. Our Mishnah, Yisoma Shesiato Imo Achamidaita. If Yisoma was married off to Rabbanan by her mother or older brother with her permission, in other words, she didn't refuse this. She got married. The chosvulah b'meya or b'chamishim zud, but they gave her less than the ideal dowry. They gave her a pauper's dowry of chamishim or a little bit more meya. So we said it on Mishnah, Yecholahi Misha Tagdil. Even though she gave permission to this, when she reaches the age of being a gedola, she is allowed to go to court, lahotzi miyada, to go and get what she's entitled to, mashi roi li lasi law. Now, that implies that only because she was a ketana and didn't have the right to refuse to take her nidunya. Taimu de ketana. So she's a ketana. She can't make statements. She doesn't have any halachic right to go and forego her nidunya. But the implication is, if she got married when she was a nara, ha gedola, vitra, then in fact she would have the right to have given up a dowry, and not like Rebbe, she wouldn't be entitled to go collect it at a later point in time. Either collect it when you get married, or that's it. Fafalin, you lost it. So it seems to go against Rebbe. So the Gemara says, Lokasha. No, our Mishnah doesn't go against Rebbe because ho de machoy, ho de lo machoy. Because Rebbe is saying that if she said at the time of her marriage, I'm not giving up the right to my nidunya, then she has the right to go collect it later on. Even though she doesn't collect it right now, she has the right to go collect it later on. But where our Mishnah said that it's only for a ketana that doesn't give up the right to nidunya, implication being that a gedola, ha gedola vitra, yeah, because she didn't protest. She didn't protest, then in fact she is giving it up. And the Gemara says, I'll show you that this is right. Hochanami nistabra. Why? Because the imkein kasha, the Rebbe. If you don't say like this, then Rebbe seems to contradict another statement that Rebbe made. Detanya, where does Rebbe contradict this, if this were correct? Rebbe Omer, bas hanizonis min achim, if a daughter is being supported by the estate that her brothers had inherited, her father Nebuch passed away, so it says, notelis isu nechosim, she's entitled to get for her nedunya 1/10 of the estate. Now, that implies that Nizonis, only if she's still collecting Mizonos, so then she's entitled to go get the Nidunya. Nizonis in, but She'ena Nizonis, if she's no longer being Nizonis, lo. Now, in this situation, if she was a Bogeris, so then she's no longer Nizonis, but you're not entitled to go and then get the Nidunya either. But Rebbe had said that you are entitled to get the Nidunya even though she's a Bogeris. So this would seem to be a contradiction to Rebbe. El alav shmamina, mustn't you say over here too, in order not to have a stira, ha de machoy, ha de lo machoy, shmamina. It must be talking here as well. If she didn't protest this when she reached Bogeris, then you're right, then she lost it. But if she said, no, even though I'm a Bogeris, I'm not giving up my rights, so I still want to get my Nidunya, since she doesn't lose it, oh, that's the same teretz that we just gave, shmamina. That's the way we reconcile it in both situations. Amar Ravina Rava, Ravina says to Rava, Amar Lon Rav Adav Bar Abba Mishmoch. Ravina says to Rava that Rav Adav Bar Abba said over in your name, Bagra, if this Nebuch orphan girl who's being supported by the estate reaches the age of Bagra, she's 12 years old in 6 months, Eino Tzrich Limchus, she doesn't have to go and protest. And likewise, if she was a Nesua, if she was Nises as a Nara, also, Eino Tzrich Limchus, she doesn't have to go and protest. Not like Rebbe just said, but it's only in the case of Bagra, the Nises, Tzrich Limchos. It's only if both of them occur. She's a Bogeris, and then she got married as a Bogeris. Then, if she doesn't protest, she loses her Nidunya. But if she protests, she retains her Nidunya. So that's what Rava seems to be saying. That's what Ravina said, that Rav Adav Bar Abba said over in your name. So the Gemara questions, did Rava really say this? Did Rava really say this? After all, Rava asked Rav Nachman, Ba'isi Rava, Rav Nachman, in the case of a Yesoma, which is the case of the Yesoma, that we just brought down a moment ago, that we said that Taima Diktana, our Mishnah, was only because she was a Ketana that she entitled herself to the Nidunya. Ha Gedola Vitra, but we said that when she came a Gedola, unless she protested it, it's as if she gave it up. And that's Vashani Le, so that's what we explained. Ha De Machai, Ha De Lo Machai, that if she protested, she doesn't lose it. If she did protest, she does lose it. Now that's talking about a Nara. So how can you, Rava, say that a Nara doesn't need to do a protest even though she got married? We just said that she does. So again, lo kasha, it's not a kasha. Ha de ko mizino minayu, ha de lo ko mizino minayu. They're talking about two different cases. When Rava says that the Nara doesn't have to make a macha, it's when she's still being supported. If she's getting mizono, she certainly doesn't have to make a macha on the Nidunya. But if she's not getting support anymore, if she doesn't have mizono, so then she has to make a macha on the Nidunya, or else she will lose the Nidunya. Mark continues and says, I'm Rav Huna, I'm a Rebbe. Rav Huna says the name of Rebbe, Parnasa eino kitnai kesuba. Rav Huna says the name of Rebbe, that Parnasa is not considered a tnai of the kesuba. In other words, the right of the orphan girl to go and collect the nidunya is not a tnai of the kesuba. What is it? It's a obligation upon the orphans to take from their estate and give it to their sister. Now, technically, if it's a tnai of the kesuba, you can't be mocha it. The dead father would not be able to, before he died, to go and say, no, I don't want that to be done. Because if it's a tenai of the ksuba, he can't negate the ksuba. But if it's an obligation on the orphans to go and do this, so then the father could say, I don't want the estate to go and do that. Now, My Enoch Tai Ksuba. I gave you the answer already. The Gemara asks, what does it mean it's not a Tanai of the Ksuba? If you're going to tell me it's how you go collect this, if you're telling me that the Nadunya can be collected for Mishubadeh, but a Tanai of the Ksuba cannot be collected for Mishubadeh properties, so if the orphans then sold something, you wouldn't be allowed to go and get it from the person that they sold it to. So, Michael Mashalon, so what's the Chiddush Rebbe is telling us? This is the halacha that Motzim Leparnasa, Vehim Motzim Lemazonos. You're only allowed to go collect the Nadunya from the estate itself, and from anything that was leaned on it, but you can't collect mazonas from that. So what would be the chiddush? So Gemara says, no. Elo, you know what it's talking about. If you're going to tell me that the nedunya, the parnasa, is even allowed to be collected from metalteli, so utnai kesuba mimikakoi gavya mimetalteli lo gavya, but anything related to the ksuba cannot be collected except from karka, but it can't be collected from metalteli, that's also not right. Because the opinion of Rebbe is Le Rebbe, Idi V'Idi, Migbal Gabya. The Rebbe says that both of them are allowed to be collected from even metaltali. The Tanya, we learned in the Brisa. Echad nechosim sheish l'machrayis, v'echad nechosim ein l'machrayis. Rebbe holds that whether they're nechosim that are like karka, or whether they're nechosim that are metaltalim, there's no achrayis on them. Motzin l'mozon ha'isha v'labonos. You're allowed to go and take the mezonos, and also for the daughters. So in other words, there is a din over here of mezonos, and even a din of the dunya that you can go collect for the metaltali. Divi Rebbe. So that can't be it either. So how do we finally explain Rebbe? It's like I said, Elamai Parnasa Eino Ketai Ksuba. When Rav Huna said in the name of Rebbe that Parnasa is not considered the Tanai of the Ksuba, this is what he meant. Lichad Tanya, as we learned in the following Braisa. HaOmer, if the person, Rashi explains, HaOmer, Dira Maschal Omer, Bishas Misoso Nebuch, a person's on his deathbed, and he says, is a statement of a Shrivni, right, a person dying, and it's Keksuvim Umesurun Dom, and it's as if he wrote it down and had it signed off. So if he says, HaOmer, I do not want my daughters to be supported, their mazonos, from the estate. I gave them money already, and they can support themselves. I gave them money. I want my sons to take the estate, and they keep it to themselves. In this situation, if he says this, we don't listen to him, because this is a tenai of the ksuba. It's not his money. It belongs already to them. That's a statement attributed to the ksuba that says that the daughters can be sustained from his estate after he is not there. So he can't go and negate that. He doesn't have the power to go and negate. It's theirs. However, if he says, I don't want my daughters to get in the dunya from my estate, that he has the right to say, because that's not a tanai of the ksuba. Shomla, we do in fact listen to him, and the daughters will not get nedunya in that situation. Why not? Because Shah Parnasa ain't okay. Tanai ksuba is not considered a tanai of the ksuba. It is considered an obligation that the Yesomim have. As Rashi tells us in the last Dibra Matzal on the page, I Yisfanasu Shomlo, Shah Parnasa ain't okhovel of kitnai ksuba, el achov al Yesomim hu. This is an obligation for the Yesomim. Hecha delot siva of Shlomo Farnas same. Unless the father said not to. It's an obligation on the Yesomim to go do this, but it's not an obligation on the father if he says otherwise. We turn to Samach Tesamad Aleph, and we continue this discussion with the following. Tala le Rav le Rebbe bene chiti. Rashi explains over here that Rav sent a letter, Sholach lo igeres shlomim, a how are you doing type of hello letter to Rebbe, and in the middle of the letter, betala shelazu ben hashitim. In between the lines, he also asked him a shayla. Tosus has a slightly different understanding. He says, Pirush Rabbeinu Chal, not only Tap Tosos, that Shelos Harbe Shalu, there were many questions that they asked over here, Vayui Goros, Tefuros Zulazu, and there were many pages that were, so to say, sewn together one after the other, Ubein Osum Tefiros, and in between those stitched together pages, because of Shelazu, he added in this letter over here. Now, why did he do it that way? So the Marim Shif brings down an interesting idea that we had the other day, that Eslas Sos Hashem, Eferos Sos Sechad, the Rebbe was always very cautious that he had written down the Torah she ba'al peh, the Mishnayis, when you're really not supposed to do so. He had to do it because Eslas Sos Hashem, Eferos Sos Secha, this was the time to do it, otherwise the Torah would be lost, and therefore he did many things in this way to remind people that you just can't write down Torah she ba'al peh in the normal way. That's why he wrote it, Rav wrote it, who's a Talmud of Rebbe, in this unusual fashion. In any event, what did he write? The question was as follows. Ha'achin sheshibdu, if the sons who inherited their father, the two brothers who inherited their father, the properties that they had, they were mishabe them. They had a lien on them to somebody else. In other words, they had either sold them to somebody else or they had used them as a collateral for something else, and the daughter now wants to collect from those properties. The sister of them, the daughter of the dead man, wants to go and collect the nedunya from those properties. Is she allowed to or is she not? So Rebbe says that the daughter is allowed to collect from even karka that was on lien. So Havi Yosef Rabbi Chia Kamei, Rabbi Chia was sitting in front of Rebbe when his nephew Rav had sent this igeris, and Amalei, he said to Rebbe, Mochru o Mishkino. What did Rav mean? Did he mean that they were sold, and can the daughters collect even from properties that were sold, or is he only asking about properties that were a mashkon, they were a collateral for, let's say, some a loan to them? And in that situation, Rav was asking, could they be in fact collected by the daughter, by their sister, to pay for an adunya? So how did Rebbe Paskin on the lay? Rebbe said back to Rabbi Chia, send back to Rav, my nafkamina. It doesn't make any difference. Bein machu bein mishkino, whether the brothers had actually sold the property or they used it just as a collateral, motzi and leparnosa, the sister, the daughter of the dead person, is allowed to go and collect her nedunya from it. Of course, bein motzi and lemzonas, as Rebbe said, but she can't collect mizonas from it. Those are encumbered properties, and she can only collect mizonos from extant estate, not from encumbered properties, not from leaned property. Oh, so that's what Rebbe Chia was told by Rebbe to go and tell Rav. Now, why did Rav ask this question in this manner that it wasn't clear? Rav certainly could have asked it Machru, or he could have asked it Mishkano. Why did Rav say Ha'achin Sheshibdu? Why did he ask this unusual question? Im Machru Kamubayale, Nichtav LeMachru. If he'd wanted to ask the question about if the brothers had sold the property, he should have asked it. What happens if they sold the property? Can the daughter collect from it? And if he wanted to say it was a collateral, Mishkino, come by late. If that was his question, Niltav Mishkino. He should have said, the brothers went and used it as a mashkon. Can the daughter, their sister, go and collect from the mashkon property? So the Gemara says, Rav was very smart. Rav Tavayu come by late. Now, I'm guessing, because he wrote it in between the lines, he didn't have a lot of room to write in between the lines, so he had to use as precise a language as possible. So Rav said, I can't write both of the questions over here, Mishkenu and Mochru, so therefore he had to write it in a way that he'd get both of the answers. Rav Tavayu Komubayla, he actually wanted to ask the question, what is the din by Mochru, and what is the din by Mishkenu? So the Sofer, he said, if I write Ikasimdole Mochru, if I write, if the brothers had sold the property, could their sister go and collect from that sold property, her nedunya, so ha nicha, it would be great, ishalach li the motzim, that Rebbe Paskins, that you're allowed to go, the sister can go and get the nedunya from those sold properties, that I would certainly know koshke mishkino, if they were still in their possession and just used as collateral, certainly she could go collect from those two, and I know both of the answers. But what happens if Rebbe said, ishalach li ein motzim, you're not allowed to go and take it from sold property, but maybe the din would be, akati mishkino kobabayli. I wouldn't know the answer. What about if there were collateral properties? Maybe she would be allowed to collect from the collateral. She can't collect from loaned, but could collect from collateral. So if I asked it in that way, I wouldn't know the answer to both. And Ikasiv Nalei Mishkino. So if I just asked the Mishkino question, so it'd be great. Ishalach li the Ein Motzin. You're not allowed to collect from Mishkino, so certainly Koshkei Mochru can't collect from actually sold properties. But what happens if he says, Ishalach li Motzin, you can't collect from a collateral property? I wouldn't know the answer. Kati Mochru come and buyly. I wouldn't know the answer if they sold it. Maybe by selling it, they would lose the sister would lose the right to collect in Adunya. And therefore, Echtov Le Shibdu, I wrote down in this small little space that I had, the word Shibdu, and this way, Rebbe would understand, and he would answer me back both. The Mashmahochi, he would know that I'm asking about Mochru and about Mishkino, and this way I would get both answers, even though I only had a very little small space to go and write the question in. This is Rebbe's opinion, that you can collect from properties that are even leaned out, that were sold out to somebody else. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Now, Rav Yochanan is an Amora, but he's disagreeing with Rebbe. We'll see in a moment that he didn't disagree with Rebbe. Once he heard that Rebbe said it, he changed his opinion. Rebbe Yochanan originally said, Omar echozeh v'echozeh, both in the case of the nedunya, and certainly in the case of the zonos, ein motzin, the sister, the daughter of the dead man, is not allowed to go and collect from properties that are mishubad, that had been either sold or had been leaned for a collateral for a loan. So the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rebbe. Rebbe said that you can collect the nedunya from the lien properties, and Rabbi Yochanan says no. So they obviously asked him, did you hear what Rebbe said? They asked Rabbi Yochanan, lo shmi alei ha de Rebbe, Did he not hear what Rebbe said? And if he had heard what Rebbe said, he would have obviously listened to Rebbe. Rebbe's a Tana. And Rebbe Yochanan, as great as he was with an Amora, he would subordinate his opinion to Rebbe, or maybe not. Or Rebbe Yochanan is a great Talmud Chacham. He is allowed to disagree, even with a Tana, at least in theory. So he wouldn't subjugate his opinion to Rebbe. That's what the Gemara asks. So Toshma will show you that he really subjugated his opinion to Rebbe. Toshma diidma, because we learned in the following statement, Misha Meis, if Rachman Lusan, somebody died, and he left two daughters and one son, so the son collects 100% of the estate, but he has to go give the nedunya to the two sisters. So the first daughter, the older daughter, she took the one-tenth for her nedunya, and then before the second daughter could take her one-tenth of the nedunya, she wasn't yet ready to get married, until the one who inherited, their brother, who inherited the entire estate, he died. And now, he had no children, so therefore, the two sisters now inherit the entire estate between themselves. So, Amar Rav Yochanan, in that situation, Rav Yochanan says, Shnia Vitra, the second one doesn't get half the estate plus the 10% Nadunya. No, they just split the estate 50-50, and she lost out on her 10% Nadunya that the first daughter had gotten. So, Amar Rav Chanina questions, he says, I don't understand. Even greater than this, what you're saying, we paskin otherwise. Rebbe had said, Gedola Mizu Amru, Rebbe had paskin, Motzin Leparnosa, that you're allowed to go collect the Nadunya even from a leaned property. The Ein Motzin Mizonos, but you can't go collect Mizonos from the leaned property. Now, a leaned property was actually sold. Here, Vyatam Rishniya Vitra, he had telling me it wasn't even sold. And yet she's Vitra, she's giving up on this. If it had been sold, she doesn't have to give up on it. So certainly if it just falls to her as a Yerusha, she doesn't have to give up from it. So she should be entitled to the 10%, and then they split the estate 50-50. That's what Rav Chanina told Rav Yochanan. Now for the fact that Rav Yochanan didn't say who said that, then Isa, if Rav Yochanan did not know that Rebbe had said that, he should have asked, namely, Manomra, who's the one that said it? Now for the fact that he didn't say that, he must have known that it was Rebbe that held like that. And yet he still argued with Rebbe. Someone says, no, maybe not. In fact, Rav Yochanan never heard what Rebbe said. And once he heard what Rebbe said, he in fact retracted his opinion and he followed Rebbe. When he once heard that Rebbe said this, so he immediately retracted his opinion and followed Rebbe's opinion. Why in this situation did he say the daughter's Vitra? If he retracted his opinion, so that he should have said that she's entitled to the 10% and then divide the rest of the estate 50-50. No. He says, V'shayni hosom, dika revach beisa. Rashi explains, dira masam, shum revach beisa, shahari nishtakra harbe. She don't tell us, chatzi Yerusha. She's not getting 10%. She's not getting 50% of the Yerusha. So the 10% is a pittance compared to the 50% that she's getting. And therefore, she, so to say, forgives the 10% because she's getting 50%. Tosus asks, that's great when there's two daughters. But what happens? Tosus Diba Maskim Shu Revach Besa. Yishli Stapek, you could ask a question over here. Hecha Diga Esabonos, the Leka Revach Besa, Mahu. If there's 10 daughters, so they're not getting so much. So then the 10% that she's giving up is a very sizable chunk. So Tosus leaves that as a kasha. In any event, Amalei Rav Yemel Ravashi, if what you're saying is true, that when she's getting such a big amount, so then she forgives the 10%. So then Elamiyata, based upon what you're saying, in the following scenario, where Ashiko Mitzia Biyama, she finds a lottery ticket, and the lottery ticket gets her $1 million. So in that situation, Dika Revach Besa, so she's a very rich lady. So Hachanami, are you telling me the Lo Yavino Le'isin Chosim? So she's not entitled to get the 10% in that situation. She's independently wealthy. She suddenly is not entitled to the 10%. The 10% has nothing to do with her independent wealth. She should be entitled to that. So what over here, if she inherited 50%, why shouldn't she get the 10% and then split the rest 50-50? So I'm waiting. Where it says, Rav Ashi says, back to Rav Yemar, no. It depends where the money's coming from. Ano, Revach Besa, Mehani, Nilsei Kamina. When the money is coming from this estate itself, this is she's getting 50% of this estate, so then she's forgetting the 10%. Then it's not such a big deal. But if she happens to have independent wealth from someplace else, so then why should she have to give up this 10%? One has nothing to do with the other. With this, we conclude today's share.